Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you know, there's always so much bad news, and the news tends to focus on the bad news. Well, here perhaps is some good news that is still really legitimate news. A war that has lasted for more than 50 years seems to be ending. It's in the nation of Colombia between the country's government and the rebel group, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC. After 4 years of negotiations, the Colombian government and FARC have reached a peace agreement. This is the first major step in what will undoubtedly be a difficult process of bringing thousands of rebels back into the fold of Colombian society after decades of isolation and violent conflict have claimed over a quarter of a million lives. Here to discuss the peace treaty between Colombia and FARC, the challenges ahead, and perhaps, I hope, lessons for other seemingly intractable conflicts, is the Andes Bureau Chief at the New York Times, Nicholas Casey. He joins me now from Venezuela. Welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York, Nicholas.
Hi. Hello from Caracas.
So for our listeners who actually aren't familiar with this conflict, even though they may have heard the term FARC over the years, can you begin by giving us just a really brief history of the war between the Colombian government and FARC and what it was about?
Yeah, well, the FARC, or the Colombian rebels, this is one of the oldest rebel insurgencies in the Americas. This was one of the Marxist-Leninist groups that kicked off, you know, all kinds of revolutions that took place throughout the region, from Cuba, which took place years afterward, to ones going on in Bolivia and Peru. They were the last ones, though, to lay down arms. They were one of the last to give it up. They were still, imagine this, in 2016 in rebel camps in the jungle with fatigues, with Che Guevara posters, still preaching that Marxist-Leninism was going to triumph. And, you know, what's happened now is that they are going to lay down arms. Now, they were known, the reason why they were able to carry out so long as they did had to do with the drug trade. They evolved with the times. In the 90s, after the fall of Pablo Escobar and the Cali cartel, they muscled in to the drug trade, and they became one of the largest controllers of the coca fields in Colombia, and that gave them kind of a second life that continued on until now. The turning point, though, was when the U.S. started to get deeply involved in Colombia under an aid program that was called Plan Colombia that delivered billions of dollars of aid to the Colombian government to curb drug trafficking there, but a lot of that became aid that was turned toward the FARC. And by the time that President Santos, who's in charge now and is going to be signing the deal, came into office, the FARC was extremely diminished. They were hardly able to fight the same way that they were at their height, and that brought them to the negotiating table and gave us the deal that we're seeing now.
So did the FARC change over the years from a group that actually believed in something, a Marxist approach to helping people in poverty, you know, even if we don't like their methods or whatever, to a mere drug-running outfit?
A lot of people would say that. I think there's a lot of people in Colombia who feel really strongly that the FARC was no more than a drug trafficking group. Myself, I feel a bit differently. I've gone to actually see them, and that was one of the questions that I had this spring when I went to one of the rebel camps was, you know, is this just like the Mexican drug cartels who I used to report on myself when I used to work for the Wall Street Journal? I didn't think so. What you saw in that camp were people, often very young teenagers, who were idealists. Granted, the money, the financing of this was coming from the drug business, which is a pretty scary business. But you still see a kernel of the ideology there, which is kind of that old school 1960s revolutionary belief with a new generation of kids, now granted a generation that is going to have to sort of join the modern times right now, which this isn't a really big part of. But yes, I'd say that there was still a lot of the ideology left in the FARC. They're not just another drug trafficking organization like what you'd see in Central America.
So what's at the heart of the peace agreement?
Well, this is the deal that's going to try to pave a path for these rebels to lay down their arms and to join society. Now, for a lot of them, for like the foot soldiers of the FARC, the kids that I met in these camps that are all throughout the country, it's about 7,000 FARC soldiers. That means that they're going to be trying to go back into regular life, find jobs in Colombian towns, maybe even go to some of the cities that many of them have never been to. And for the leadership of the FARC, the commanders, this means that they will be trying to get into political life, a lot like some of the insurgents in Central America did afterwards. It means forming political parties. It means running for elections. And most of all, it means trying to become leaders of Colombians, mainly probably rural Colombians in their case, without using arms as the means, but rather convincing people in elections to join.
I see that one of the most discussed aspects, and actually I want to give out the phone number, because listeners, if you're from Colombia and you or your family back home have been impacted by this conflict with FARC over the years and you want to call in and discuss any aspect of the peace treaty, 212-433-WNYC. We would love to hear from some of our Colombian listeners. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. As we talk about this peace agreement after 52 years of war between the nation of Colombia, the government, and the FARC rebels, we're talking to New York Times Andes Bureau Chief Nicholas Casey, who's with us from Venezuela today. 212-433-WNYC for Colombian listeners, 212-433-9692. So one of the most discussed aspects of the peace agreement, from what I've read, is what's being called a transitional justice system, which offers reduced sentences for crimes committed by FARC members, except the most grievous offenses, I guess, kidnapping and drug trafficking, which have been essential tools to FARC's existence. How will this transitional justice system work in general? I guess I'm wondering if this is a kind of reconciliation process like we've seen in some other countries.
That's what they're trying to model this after. They're trying to set this transitional justice system not as a kind of court that will catch all the FARC and prosecute them, but more as how a country comes out of a civil war where everybody's going to have to participate in the society to some degree. Because of that, it's also one of the most controversial parts of this peace deal, because it's important to remember the really dark role that FARC has played in Colombian history. Almost every family in some way was touched by the violence. And for years, Colombians, especially city dwellers, just lived in fear that they were going to be kidnapped by the FARC. And the FARC was essentially financed its operations, before it really found its stride in the coca trade, solely through kidnapping. And this was an extremely terrorized up on people. Now, that means, though, that people who are Colombians see as to blame.
You know what, Nicholas, I'm going to jump in here because your line is breaking up and getting a little hard to understand you on. So we're going to try to re-up with you. And in the meantime, we do have people of Colombian descent or Colombians yourselves calling in. So let's hear from a few callers. And I'm interested to see that there is some opposition on board to this peace treaty. And I think, for example, from Mario in Cranford. Mario, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, good morning. I was calling because if you didn't leave what it's to live in Colombia with these people, you don't really know. You cannot actually, you can give an opinion, but you cannot really know what's going on. These people are killers, they're murderers, they like to kidnap people. They have zero interest on the well-being of the country. They have not done anything for the people of the country but kill them and kidnapping them. So when this gentleman says that the people from the little kids that they first of all the little kids that they kidnap in the jungle, and they start teaching them all those ideas, they're not actually teaching them. They're filling their minds with these ideas, and they have no opinion to express themselves. Otherwise, they will kill them. So now they want money and they want to have access to be politicians and don't pay jail. Like, it's crazy. It's just, I don't know. It's just crazy.
Do you think that this would at least lead to a better future for the people of Colombia who you're describing as at risk from violence by the FARC? If this brings them into the fold, and maybe it's too soft on them or more soft than you would like it to be in terms of justice for past crimes, does it help protect the people of Colombia going forward, in your opinion?
I do think it's going to help, because the president that we have right now has zero intention of fighting them. And the only thing that he wants to be remembered for is to have signed this for finishing this war that it has lasted so long. So it would be better, but a lot of people would feel the pain of all these bandidos don't getting any jail time and getting all this money back and let them keep all the money that they made with the drug business, and after a while get into have a political quorum within the Senate. So it would be very painful for the Colombian people, but it will help a lot with peace. And don't forget that we still have another group of rebels, the ELN. And, you know, it's
not
going to be the same thing.
Mario, thank you so much. Carlos in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me on the show.
Sure.
I wanted to comment on how most of the city elites who are opposed to the peace treaty is because there is an emotional disconnection from the war. They're basically just trying to push on for the war, but none of their kids are going to war. But on the other hand, listening to the former caller and what's been the rhetoric from the opposition, it's this inability to forgive one another and this inability to think past the fact that the only reasonable punishment for people is jail. The FARC, as, you know, at the end of the day, has a political thought, has a political ideology, and even though their practices should be condemned with the strongest of terms, we do need a better society for Colombia. I mean, this is unsustainable. It's been 50 years, right?
Right. So you're articulating that you understand the kinds of objections that the previous caller had, but you think it's still worth going forward with it for the future. Did you say that a lot of the people in the major cities of Colombia are the opponents of this deal?
I would say that a lot of people are, particularly those who belong to the elites, so people with money who have never really had an active part in the conflict. Those are the ones pushing for, to keep out the war. The conservative sort of elite of Colombia are definitely against it.
Interesting. Carlos, thank you so much. And I think we have Nicholas Casey back with us, Andy's bureau chief for the New York Times, on this peace agreement after 52 years of war between the FARC rebels and the government of Colombia. Nicholas, I think you were able to hear that last caller. I'm not sure if you were able to hear the previous caller who said that he's against the agreement because it lets some of these violent FARC rebels off the hook too much.
I heard both the tail end of the first one and the full of the second one. I think one thing to remember with this is just how deeply emotional these years were for all Colombians. And I can understand anyone who says that they can't forgive the FARC and they don't want this peace deal to go through the way that it is. It's very challenging to accept. That said, the only thing that you can imagine that would be worse than the pain that goes through seeing people that you feel have committed crimes not have the sentences you'd like is for this war to continue. And that's the other option. So, and that's not an option right now in Colombia. The peace deal at this point has to continue. Otherwise, the war is going to continue. And it means that both sides are going to be accepting things that are difficult for them. It's very difficult for the FARC to give up their arms right now because there are many paramilitary groups out that will be trying to hunt them down afterward. It's very difficult for the victims of this war to accept that the perpetrators of some of the crimes against them are going to be walking around in their streets. They're going to be seeing campaign posters of them running for office. It's difficult for everyone, but I think, as the second caller pointed out, what's important is that for the next generation, they're not going to inherit this war as the previous generations have, and that's what's going to happen.
I see we're getting one call from Columbia. Jeff is in Columbia now. Jeff, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York. Where are you?
Hey, good morning, Brian. I hope you guys can hear me. Normally calling from Brooklyn, but I'm here in Columbia for months, and it's been fascinating to talk to people here on the ground. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. Great. It's been fascinating talking to my family. My parents are from here. I didn't come to Colombia for over 20 years because of my own fears about this war, about being kidnapped. And I'm down here now for a month doing business, talking to family, talking to cab drivers, talking to people in the restaurants to understand what this is all about and how people feel. And it's fascinating to me. One is, as your speaker was commenting, that when your callers commented, is that split between the upper classes who just want to go after this war because they say go after the rebels because they're so indignant about this crime these groups have committed against the people, these atrocities. Just go after them. And this is kind of Uribe, the ex-president's position, who's been really attacking in the press and in the Senate. He's currently a senator, this peace accord against President Santos. And I'm in the cab with a guy the other day, and he says, okay, so what do you think about this? How would you vote? I said, I would vote yes. He said, oh, so you're for Santos. He says, no, I don't know anything about this, the president's policies overall. This isn't about Santos. But the divide is almost like what we have with Obamacare in the United States, that people are against a program because of what they think this president represents rather than what the details of the peace process is. And I've actually told a couple of people I feel bad because maybe I shouldn't be advocating as a foreigner. But I say, look what happened in Northern Ireland, in Ireland, in Africa, in Kosovo, in post-World War II Germany, that you have to eventually just say, okay, we're not going to forget, but we have to stop. We have to turn our back to what people have. There are some terrible crimes committed by people, but if we as a society don't move forward, how long will this go on? If you guys don't sign this peace accord, and they're just going to go back into the mountains and continue their activities for the next 40, 50 years. You cannot stop an insurgency with people hiding in the jungle if you don't just say, okay, one side has to finally say enough.
And there will be a referendum, Jeff, right?
Yeah, it's happening in October. And talking to my aunts, my family's well established down here, so a lot of my older, the people, older generation in my family are, no, we have to go and smote these people. And the younger ones are like, yeah, no, we've had enough. Let's just do this, because the worst thing that will happen is if the FARC continue their activities and they don't really follow through, is that the government saddles up and goes after them again anyway. I mean, the government really holds all the cards here.
That's really interesting. Jeff, thank you so much for checking in with us from Columbia today. Nicholas, can you handicap this referendum for us? Do you see the breakdown as kind of generational, as Jeff was describing it, and do you think it's likely to pass?
The polls show it's pretty likely to pass, although the amount of support that it's had has gone down a bit as this peace process kind of dragged on. I think the general trend is that you see almost everybody in Colombia wants there to be peace. The question is this the way that they want the peace to be brokered? And that's, yeah, you do see it breaking down among generational lines. Younger people, I think, tend to be more in favor of this deal than the older people. City dwellers, especially conservative city dwellers, as another caller pointed out, tend to be totally against this deal. Many people that supported President Uribe, who was the last president, the biggest, you know, opponent of this deal, they continue to be opponents of this deal. But I think at the end of the day, Colombians are going to go to the polls and ask themselves, do they want to go fight this war more or not? Some people have said there could be like a Brexit surprise that happens. Obviously that could, but I think the damage that would cause to Colombia would be so much more grave than you know, the surprise in Britain. I don't think this referendum is gonna yield any surprises. I think it's pretty likely that Colombians are gonna reaffirm having this peace deal signed.
Our Middle East correspondent Deb Amos was on the show last week talking about Syria and said civil wars tend to end when both sides are tired. It sounds like that applies here.
I think it does. And this went on for 52 years, and everybody is very tired after all that time. And I think, you know, looking at the Middle East, looking at something like the Oslo peace process that got very close to coming to fruition and didn't, that's an important reminder for Colombians now, which is that you can have the signing ceremony, you can have everything take place and look good. The important thing is that this gets implemented correctly, because you're never out of the woods until everybody has stood down.
Yeah.
And this is the last part that you're going to see with this referendum.
So there's a lesson from Oslo for Colombia. Last question. Do you think there are lessons from Colombia and the fact that this peace accord was arrived at for other seemingly intractable conflicts in the world, in the Middle East or anywhere?
I think the biggest lesson is that don't wait 52 years to get to your peace deal. Syria can't go through a half century of what it's going through. It can't wait as long as Colombia did. Israel has gone through a much longer period of unrest even than Colombia at this point. So yeah, I think, you know, if this goes properly, I think it could be, you know, a point of hope for other countries that are in civil strife right now, and that both sides can get above their ideology and realize that we're all human and we need to live together in the same country.
Nicholas Casey, the Andes bureau chief for the New York Times, joining us from Venezuela today on the Colombia Peace Accord. Thank you so much. And we recommend you to a piece by Annie Coriel, reporter who used to do work with us in the New York Times today. She's got a piece about her own father who was kidnapped by the FARC in 1999 and held for 8 months.